This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios. Speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? You better visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That is 208-467-7468.
Hi, Colin.
Hi, Aaron.
How are you?
Ah,
the best.
I'm so great, Aaron.
You feel the what sarcasm? A lie. What a bold-faced lie.
I'm doing better now. How about
well, that's
that?
Good. Well, you saw me.
That's it.
Your pride and joy, who you love.
Pride and prejudice.
My pride and my prejudice. So we decided the other day that we would probably start introducing Colin's podcast snacks.
Oh, that's
because you
one.
Always bring a great snack. And last time, if you remember, we talked about the pickle and I had to wrap my head around the Kool-Aid pickle. But why don't you tell us what you brought today?
Today I am munching on. Colin's crunching on.
Colin's crunching on.
Do you want one better? Popcorners? The crunchy and wholesome popcorn snack. It's like a popcorn Dorito.
It's like a pop chip, kind of.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. Can you guys hear it? Can y'all people hear it?
Ooh, yum, yum. And then what else do you have?
And then I have America's Classic Dots.
Dots candies. And a big box, too. Not like a little kid box. Like, it's for adults.
Movie theater.
Yes. I can't wait
to
go back.
So I'm kind of like...
Yeah. You got it all. Mm-hmm. And you also brought a sucker, a Tootsie Roll. A classic Tootsie Pop. Tootsie Pop. That's right. I'm so pleased for you. I brought a sparkling water. It's the shitty like Signature Select Soleil brand. Although it's exactly the same as LaCroix and it's 2 for $5 for 12 packs. So that's what I get. So let's just, you know, dive on in. Today we're talking about Frida. Frida is a 2002 film.
Frida, call her by her name.
Frida, call her by her name, Kahlo. Frida Kahlo Rivera, some might even say. Mm. Some might say Mrs. Rivera. In fact, she was referred to that in the film.
Yes, she was.
So Frida is a kind of a biopic, right?
It is a biopic.
Not kind of, it is. Frida is a biopic of Frida Kahlo, famous Mexican artist. Who's played by Salma Hayek. This film came out in 2002. And I just talked to one of our producers, Travis, who said he was not in school yet in 2002. And that made me feel
wait. He wasn't
not good.
Wait. Like,
so in 2000,
was in preschool?
He was not in school yet.
Like kindergarten?
Correct, because he was so young.
I want to kill him.
Because in 2002, what grade is that for us?
Well, I'm older than you.
Okay, like a year older. But like, that's like second grade?
I was 12.
In 2002? Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. I was 11. I don't like this game. I forfeit.
Yeah.
I was like in fourth grade then. Oh, I'm over here like, oh, I was just a wee little one.
No,
I lied.
I was 12. So we were like six.
It made me feel
grade.
Old
sixth
that he
grade?
Did that.
Seventh grade.
I don't know.
Anyway,
a lot older than Travis.
Yeah.
So that made me feel really old. But so some basics about the film, if I may. Directed by Julie Taymor. So we have a woman director here too. Starring Salma Hayek, Alfred Molina, Jeffrey Rush, Ashley Judd, and Antonio Banderas.
Yeah. I think those two were only in there for a
And then they like
second.
Popped in there. Yeah. And you know who else is in there that I was surprised to see because he's not on the opening credits or I didn't see it. Or maybe I missed it. But Edward Norton is in
Yeah. He plays the Rockefeller.
Yeah. And I was like, how'd you sneak in here? Like, It was just, I was surprised to see him. I don't know.
That's okay. Because it was Fight Club. Fight Club was like, I'm trying to figure out how famous he was at that point.
Oh, let's take a gander. Take a gander. Talk amongst yourselves, everyone. yeah, because it was a really small role, and he actually had an uncredited writing credit or producer credit on the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a part of it, which is, I mean, he's fine. I like him. Do you like him?
I do. I do feel like he could be. I like him in not the Prestige. Was it the Prestige or the
The Illusionist is with him. That's a good one.
The Prestige was with Christian Bale.
And Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman, who I don't like Hugh Jackman.
Oh, my God. Why?
Oh, do we have the time? No. I have a lot.
Honestly, you are the first person I've ever met that said, yeah, I don't really like Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, he's okay. Certain films, he's great. But
is it that your Les Mis beef?
Les Mis is that what it is? Showman. Those were terrible movies.
I didn't think that Barnum was a good person to highlight. He wasn't, I don't care for the ethics surrounding animals.
Yeah.
And like his shitty behavior.
And it was just a shitty movie.
Yeah, it wasn't that great. Fight Club came out in 1999.
Okay, so he's.
So he was, he the, did it. He was yeah, there.
Pretty famous.
So, yeah. So he plays Nelson Rockefeller. Good for him. Yeah, and so it was based on a book written by Hayden Herrera. And that's one of the two Frida productions he was actually a part of. So there's been, of course, multiple biopics and things like that throughout the years. And he's been a part of two of those projects, the original writer. And then the screenplay was written by four people, Clancy Siegel, Diane Lake, Gregory Nava, and Anna Thomas. So there's a lot of people writing that screenplay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to get straight to the women. I'm sorry. Is that okay? Can we just dive on in?
Dive on in.
Okay.
Do you want to give a quick synopsis of the film?
Yeah, a quick synopsis. I mean, it's really about Frida Kahlo's, I mean, it's about her life. A major part of the film is really focused on her relationship with Diego Rivera, who, as our listeners might know, is another very famous Mexican artist who was very revered. So the film starts when she is in university, and you see a scene, or actually it starts as a scene and then it's a quick flashback.
Yeah.
To not really a flashback, because then it kind of starts when she's in university and Diego Rivera is introduced very early on. Diego Rivera is played by Alfred Molina, who gained like 50 pounds for the role. He was a big guy. And so it's about, you know, her family, and she's a little different than her family. And I love one of my favorite scenes is when they're taking the family picture and she dresses in like a full men's suit and kind of comes out like very masculine.
Right.
And her mom is just like, oh my God, like so not into it. But she has those tendencies, and you can see from the beginning that she's very ahead of her time, very different from, what women are expected to be at that time. Mm-hmm. But of course, a very pivotal part of the film is the accident, right? So there's the accident on the trolley. Yeah, I would call it a trolley.
Would you like something from the trolley?
Trolley. I would like something from that trolley, though. And so there's a big accident on the trolley, and she is left in like a full body cast, back, legs, just all of it. And then, you know, the doctors don't think she's going to walk again, and then she does walk again, but she's in pain the majority of her life, and that's something that's constant pain. And back then, I mean, it's not like you can pop some ibuprofen and call it a day.
Yeah, you're literally taking morphine.
Yeah, it's morphine or nothing, essentially.
Yeah,
opioids. Or opioids. And so, I think that some of the film looks at the way she deals with her pain, obviously through her art, but she does reference that a lot. But she's not a complainer about it at all. So that's the basic synopsis. Would you have anything to add?
No, yeah, and it hits the high points in her life. The story is truly, you know, about her and Diego and their life, love life, and then their careers kind of branching out.
Yeah.
So the movie, I mean, it does show her death, so it pretty much encapsulate her and entire life.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked it. I had not seen it before. You had seen it before.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Long time ago. My fiance gave me a bunch of shit about it this morning because he said, he's like, oh, what are you guys doing today? He said, oh, we're doing Frida. And I'm describing, oh, it's that Selma Hayek movie, which means nothing to him. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you haven't seen that? I know. Seth. I was like, oh, I'm
cultured.
Yeah.
Uncultured
swine. Uncultured swine, me. And I was like, I'm sorry, I haven't seen all the movies. He's like, but you're the movie guy. And I'm like, you're what?
It's the movie guy.
That was our conversation this morning. So he was being a hater and he was like, I've seen it. And I was like, okay. So anyway, so getting into the women, I was really excited to see that Julie Taymor was the director because she did one of, I don't know if this is a favorite movie, but it's something I love watching over and over again. And she did Across the Universe. And and I love that movie. 2007, it was, you know, the musical that was using all of the Beatles music, starring like Jim Sturgess and Evan Rachel Wood. Bono makes it in there. So I really love that film. She's also directed films like Titus that
which have is one of my favorites.
Really? Is it with Anthony Hopkins? It's one of your favorite films.
I love Titus, and she also did The Tempest with God, I can't remember the actor's name. But she does really great high concept, high art, oversaturated.
Yes.
But then also it's like still grounded in this way.
Yeah.
Because like now the moment you said Across the Universe, I see so many similarities
in the cinematography. Same way. It's like
very colorful and bright, but there's still this kind of reality that like trances through, and then it goes into the surreal. So,
and I love that, and the colors are so vibrant and
overly saturated. Oh
yes, I love that's so I love Across the Universe, and The Tempest was one of two Shakespeare films that she did because she also did A Midsummer Night's Dream. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of her vibe, if you will. And so she did that. Her most recent film was The Glorias with Julianne Moore and our love of our lives, Janelle Monáe. And for those of you who don't know, Janelle Monáe is the artist who sings the song that's in our intro. And I would like to say that my friend Ellie asked if it was me singing at the beginning of the podcast, and I've never been more flattered in my life.
She directed the original Broadway Lion King.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so this woman.
The OG one. She's been around.
She's seasoned.
Very seasoned.
You know what I mean? Lemon pepper salt all over.
Yes,
and, now that we're kind of realizing, you can totally see like she designs a movie for the stage. It's not like, not in the sense it's like contained, but like you're shooting for like the back of the house. So everything has to be vibrant and big. Yeah,
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And like it just seems so theatrical to me.
Right.
Not so much in like the script or, you know, any the direction between the two. I was going to say customers. Oh my God.
The two customers in the film, the two characters.
The two characters that seemed natural, but everything around it just seemed like, a musical.
Yeah. I was really pleased to see that. But then, it was kind of that light bulb moment of like, oh yeah, that is her.
Yeah.
Which is so cool. Our other woman is Salma Hayek.
And she was very integral in getting this movie.
Yes, and we will talk about the controversy a little bit later on. But we know Salma from films such as Fools Rush In and Dogma, which is a couple movies she did before Frida. And then she did, Banditas, Across the Universe, Savages, Like a Boss. And then the film that she's in next, which is still filming, I believe, is House of Gucci.
Oh, yes.
Adam Driver.
I was going to say Lady Gaga, but
okay. Anyway, and just kidding. I love Lady Gaga. Do you like Salma Hayek?
I do. I do. Yeah. I think this was a really pivotal role for her. I mean, it's probably her, like you said, she was in was she in Dawn of the Dusk or?
Oh my gosh, she was from Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah,
she.
That was like one of her first movies.
It was. So that's that Quentin Tarantino movie where she's like a stripper
vampire.
A vampire. Okay, whatever. Stripper vampire. I didn't finish it. And well, let's. Anyway,
you know, hey, listen, if I can watch Vampire Diaries, you know I've seen that.
I know you have. I know you have. And so it's, I just remember, we watched it in school because my theater teacher was, didn't love playing by the rules in more ways than one. And so,
is that code word he's gay?
No, that's code for sleeping with your student.
Oh!
And AO. And, so anyway, she wasn't in high school at the time, but anyway, well, maybe she was. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And no, it's not justifiable. And so we watched that in school and, you know, she's up there and she has one leg, you know, her knee up and she's pouring the alcohol down her leg, off her toes into, is it Quentin Tarantino's mouth?
So.
And he's just like.
Sopping it up, mother's mouth. But, you know, that's a good. That's a good reference for it because prior to this, she was seen as a sex symbol.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? She's a sexy and all those disgusting kind of stereotypical tropes we think about Latinx actresses. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They all just piled
onto her.
You know,
she is a very beautiful woman.
Stunning.
She has a petite figure, but she has very full breasts and like she's very charming and she's beautiful. Funny.
You know what I mean? Beautiful accent.
Oh yeah.
But the thing, you know, I find her most attractive about her is that her spontaneity.
Yeah.
And how just like damn determined she is. Like she is a charismatic woman, but when she gets something in her head, especially with this film, you know, she gets it until she gets it.
Yeah.
She's going until she gets it.
Which we love.
Yeah.
We love a woman like that.
And highly intelligent.
Oh, yeah.
Supremely intelligent.
Well, and she grew up, obviously she's Mexican, but she grew up in more than one country. She's very worldly. She's, I think, had a lot of experience before she was, you know, at the fame that she is, which I think contributes to that, certainly. So writers, other women that we can focus on are writers Diane Lake and Anna Thomas, who wrote a screenplay along with two others. This is the only writing credit for Diane Lake, but for Anna Thomas, she's been around. None of the films I like popped out to me like, oh yeah, I know that one. So I had to do a little digging, but her earliest credit is from 1976. For the film The Confessions of Amans, I'm not really sure. She also wrote the screenplay for My Family, which has like Jimmy Smits and Edward James Olmos. But I think Frida is likely her best known screenplay, and she actually hasn't done one since then.
Oh,
so
wow.
That was her last one. I mean, quit while you're ahead, right?
I know, one and done.
Shoot. All right. And I have some fun things for you too.
Okay.
Awards and nominations.
Gosh, because this one.
You get prepared, my friend. So 6 Academy Awards total, nominations total.
Which is great. Especially when we talk about the context.
Context, this is 2002, people.
Yes.
Okay. So the awards that Frida was nominated for were Best Music for Original Song, Best Costume Design, Best Art Direction, Best Actress in a Leading Role for Salma Hayek.
Well deserved.
Very well deserved. Best Makeup and Best Music Original Score. So it won Best Original Score and Best Makeup.
Which the musical was great. And I believe Selma actually sang some good chunks of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did the recordings.
Yeah.
I felt like Selma, controversial but brave.
Controversial.
Selma should have won. I mean, yeah, for
sure.
Oh,
okay. Well, let's talk about who else was nominated that year, shall we?
Oh, God, this is good.
So, besides Selma Hayek for Frida, Nicole Kidman for The Hours, and she won. Other people nominated Diane Lane for Unfaithful.
Oh, my gosh.
That is a sexy cover of a movie.
Good movie.
That's a sexy movie.
She is a firecracker in the movie.
Jennifer
Lopez wishes she could.
Wishes.
Because didn't she, like, they released a movie very similarly, like, not too long ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She could never.
No.
Julianne Moore for Far From Heaven. You look confused. I didn't know that one. And then Renee Zellweger for Chicago.
Okay. So what do we have? So how many how many nominees did we have in total?
Five.
So five. So three out of the five.
Yep.
Were Miramax movies.
Okay. Which I love that you know this stuff.
So this
is where it's your time to shine, baby.
There is a YouTube channel called Be Kind Rewind. She broke down Nicole Kidman's kind of trajectory, her Oscar wins, specifically this one.
Because it's
so heavily attached to Harvey Weinstein. Weinstein had a reputation, of course, being a rapist and a pig of a human.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
But he also would have Weinstein girls. And it very harkened back to the, you know, golden age, silver age of Hollywood films, where these production houses, studio houses, would have actors on retainer. Well, they really can't do that anymore because of things. And so, you know, we have Harvey Weinstein, who purposely picks these women in these projects in order to, you know, build up the films in their canon, but also money, revenue. You know what I mean? And he was notorious for campaigning. And I mean to the point where he was like hounding critics and hounding, you know, anybody part of the process. And relentless, because he knew if I have best actress, best film, Oscar nominee on the poster, it just doubles and triples and increases the revenue on the back end after the awards season.
Right.
We see it all the time now. You know, this is the reason why awards are so popular, is because it creates even more revenue. It's not about the art.
No. I'm sure some people think it is. But no, it's about the money.
It's absolutely about the money. And so you have Renee Zellweger in Chicago, which you enjoy, right?
I love Chicago.
Chicago's amazing.
Can I tell a quick story about Chicago? Yeah. I watched it in the theaters. So thinking about how old I was in 2002, but bringing it back to the beginning of this. 12. You know, like 11 or something. We're at the theater in Wenatchee, Washington. Because that's where my grandmother lived. So we went to see Chicago. And if you all recall, one of the openings, well, not the opening scene when Catherine Zeta-Jones is singing All That Jazz, but the scene where Renee Zellweger is hooking up with Fred, the character Fred Casey, right? And I'm, at as an 11-year-old, I'm like, oh, shit, this is spicy. My mother leans over, covers my eyes in the movie theater. I was so embarrassed, and I was trying so hard to peek through her nimble little fingers because I wanted to see what was happening.
Sex, that was what happened.
Yeah, but Cheryl was like, not today.
Not my daughter.
Not today, not ever. Just kidding, well, Mom.
So she was in Chicago. I don't think, from what I have researched and what I've read, no one was expecting Chicago to do that well.
I don't think so, yeah.
You know what I mean? If you look at, like, movie musicals during that time, there hasn't been really what popular ones in the 90s or the 80s. The last one was probably like, not Funny Girl, but Dolly.
Rent. I'm just kidding.
Oh my gosh, stop it. Rent was like, that came out before. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'm kidding.
I hate you, Rent. But Hello, Dolly was probably the last. Yeah. And that one kind of, if you look at box office.
Yeah.
And so here you have this movie musical that just like explodes. Mm-hmm. Huge.
Mm-hmm. Well, it had an all-star cast.
Yeah. Yeah. All-star cast. It was popular on Broadway, but they were like, I don't think people will connect with it.
Yeah.
Shoots off like a rocket.
It does.
And so she gets promotion. Mm-hmm. You have The Hours with Nicole Kidman. Nicole Kidman is an ex-wife of Brad Smith. No, Brad Smith.
What heck? First of all, it's Brad Pitt. Second of all, it's Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise.
She married Brad Pitt, George Clooney, Matt Damon, Tom Cruise.
All of them. She divorces him in this nasty divorce, right?
Yes.
And all of a sudden she emerges and she starts doing all these movies on her own.
Time to shine.
This was her moment.
Yeah, it was.
She gets pushed through with The Hours.
Yep.
She puts on that dumbass prosthetic nose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
unrecognizable, you might say.
But she gives a stellar performance.
As Virginia Woolf. Yes.
I mean, beloved.
Yeah, it's very good.
So, of course, she gets promotion. And then you have Selma Hayek, mm-hmm. woman of color, disregarded within the community because they said no one knows who Frida Kahlo is. No one wants to, you know what I mean? No one cares.
By the way.
At that time, between this movie and the book that was released, that's when we, as a popular culture, we realized her. Now, in certain regions, of course, she was popular. She's famous. But as America? It's really the combination
of
this movie.
Yeah, we're really, we're not that great.
No, not at all. And she fought so hard, not only to get this movie made, but she says in interviews herself, she's like, it was a battle. Like, it was a battle to get this movie made for everyone to believe me. And then also the when it came to like press and promotion, this movie didn't get any.
Right.
So Selma Hayek got nominated purely on her performance. It wasn't because someone was sending her gift baskets and she was doing a bunch of interviews.
Right.
When I try to find interviews, you could find like maybe one or two on YouTube, and you can find them now recently within the last 2 years because of the case that broke up with Harvey Weinstein.
Well, and I have a couple quotes about that, if I may, while we're on the subject. So according to IMDb, Salma Hayek had to sue producer Harvey Weinstein for breach of contract before the filming of the movie as he threatened to replace her with another actress despite the fact that she had brought the project to him with an agreement that she would produce and star in the film. Right? Secondly, Salma Hayek said the producer Harvey Weinstein threatened to shut down production during filming unless she agreed to do full frontal nude scene with another woman. Hayek felt she'd exhausted all other options and shot the scene, but it took a mental toll on her, and she said she basically had a nervous breakdown, and like my body was shaking uncontrollably, like she was crying, and like her breath was short, like she was really upset, and she said it wasn't that it was uncomfortable about acting an intimate scene with another woman. That's not really what it was about. Yeah. It was that she felt like absolutely forced by Weinstein. And like perhaps she said in retaliation because she refused all of his sexual advances. And, you know, at the time, I have no doubt that that was something that she was saying, maybe not publicly, but like that was that probably wasn't a secret on the set.
No, it's probably well known. But she says herself she regrets that she didn't fight more, that she, you know, didn't speak up more.
Right.
And I think it's that moment right there. She's. That helplessness, I think, affected her.
Well, he's a career ender. Like, I thought it was so funny that Ashley Judd is in this film.
And
because
the only reason
that
why
is,
she is, mm-hmm. the only reason why she is because Selma Hayek asked her to be. They were very good friends. I was just watching an interview about it, and she asked Ashley, and Ashley was like, I've got to go. Tell me what you want. And Selma's like, well, can you please be in this movie with me? And she's like, done. I'll do it. I don't have much money. Done. I'll do it.
Right
on good faith. So, like, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm super surprised.
Well, and we missed out on Ashley Judd.
God.
We missed out on her because Harvey Weinstein really effectively ended her, ability to get those roles that would have her seen. And she's
there's so many movies that she
could have just killed it. And she looks great in this movie.
I didn't even recognize her.
I didn't either. She looks fantastic. Ugh.
She was like lanky and she moved
so
beautifully.
She wore these backless dresses. And yeah, she was fantastic. So
as American society,
have missed out on Ashley Judd
reparations.
Yes, we do.
Her flowers are due now.
So that was, you know, that was the deal. But let's say, you know, it's 2022. These same five women are nominated. It's a different outcome, probably. Right?
I think Frida would have gotten a lot more promotion.
A lot more
attention.
I think
attention. It got a lot more praise.
Yeah.
I think it would have been potentially nominated for Best Picture.
Best Picture.
Because it's a damn good
Well, now
movie.
That it's, you know, 10 films instead of 5.
Yeah.
Right? I have no doubt that it would have been in there.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Much more praise. How did you think about Selma Hayek's performance?
I thought she did really well. You had said it earlier that she has this really great spark of spontaneity.
Yeah.
And one of the first films in the scene, she's like running through the university kind of like quad, I guess it would be called. And she's like getting, you know, her friends and saying, you know, Diego Rivera's in the auditorium with a naked woman and they're all like running to see, you know. And she just has this really like playfulness about her in the film that I really enjoyed. Her boyfriend at the beginning is played by Diego Luna, who was really, really not known at all at that time, but he's been in so many things since then. And I'm a big fan of his, like Babel, and he was in Milk, about Harvey Milk. Mm-hmm. He was one of the boyfriends, you know?
Yeah.
So he's gotten some really great roles, actually.
I didn't even recognize him.
Yeah. So he's great. So anyway, but she was great. She was playful. I enjoyed seeing the relationship between her and her father.
That was some good moments.
It was some really nice moments. His accent didn't do it for me. Because at the beginning, I was
this podcast is now about accents, and we're just going
to... Well, shit, you started it, honestly. Like, at the beginning, I'm like, you're Mexican, so you must... That's an accent. And then later he's like, tells his wife that he's like, well, you married a German Jew. And I'm like, oh, is that what you're doing?
Yeah, he's a German
Jew. He's British. Like, he's a British actor. And so sometimes that came out and I was like, ooh, where are we at here? Where are we at? So anyway, that bugged me a little bit just because I think about it now that you've, you know, started it. And I like the relationship between her and her father. It was very obvious that, you know, her dad really understood her, and her dad was also an artist and, you know, encouraged her to do this. And her mom's over there like, oh, I really hope you get married someday type of a thing. I wonder, and I'd love your thoughts on how historically accurate this film is.
Probably not super. Again, there's this level of surrealism,
right,
that allows this film not to be accurate.
And not be a hindrance.
No, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what you're saying. Film. Yeah.
So there's, you know what I mean? There's probably countless scenes that they over-dramatize they added, you know what I mean, sensational. But I think for the most part, like the tent poles, like the big moments, like there were some scenes where I'm like, I have to Google this real quick. Because like when she, like, when her, Diego slept with her sister, I'm like, no, this is too, and then I Googled and they did.
Why don't you tell us about Frida and Diego's relationship?
Well, he was twice her age. Mm-hmm. I think he was like in his 40s and
four times her size. Just kidding.
I mean, that's accurate.
Just kidding.
He was a big man.
He's a big man.
Big man. He wasn't classically handsome. No. Some would say ugly. There are scenes where they call him a toad or a frog. And she, in her writing, she said he looked like a toad. He looked like a frog.
And what did she keep calling him? Like the Spanish word for like.
Pants or ass?
No, it was like panzo or so, but meaning fat.
Oh yeah.
You know,
and she was very small, petite, fragile because of the accident.
Yeah, fragile.
Disabled. If you wanted to.
Is she proving herself in the film because of, you know, she defied all odds by learning how to walk again?
Oh yeah.
Is this consistent mission to prove it, right?
Yeah, she was constantly fighting. You know what I mean? To be seen, yeah. To be heard, and she, like, I don't think Selma, and this is an interesting thing that I was always focusing on, is like beyond historic accuracy. Like, did the actor or actress like capture that person? And when you think of like Meryl Streep in Iron Lady, she becomes Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, yes.
Like, just dissolves.
Absolutely.
And for me, Selma Hayek looks like Frida Kahlo. I assume has the mannerisms and everything.
Yeah.
But she retains a bit of herself.
Yeah.
That I don't know I haven't seen before. Like, you can still see because we don't know, you know what I mean, we don't have like video or audio or. We don't know who she really, how
she
sounded.
It's kind of a guess.
And we can only go with her writings and how she described. And so I think, you know what I mean, Selma Hayek like was almost like possessed by Frida Kahlo. So you get two people kind of relating. You know what I mean? So it's almost like, I don't know. It's just, it was weird. Not weird. It was awesome to see an actor interpret who they thought Frida Kahlo was, and not this like biblical, you know, she had this way, this is how her mouth moves, this is how she walked. No, this is how I feel like Frida Kahlo looks like.
Yeah. Which, who better to do that, honestly?
Oh, yeah. She was made for this role. The idea that someone else could play it, I would be like, you're insane.
Do you know who wanted to?
Who?
You've already said her name this episode.
No.
Jennifer Lopez.
Nuh-uh. Really? Jennifer Lopez, calm down.
Jenny from the block, no.
She's a good actress.
Yeah, sure.
She did Selena, yeah. really well.
Yeah, she did.
But she could not do Frida Kahlo.
No.
This was a woman with tenacity. You know what I mean? She yes. was going to toe-to-toe with her husband all the time. You know, she's... She's not... J-Lo is sexy, but she's not sensual. There's something about the way...
Well, I think that, you know, a couple episodes ago, we were talking about Amy Adams and her ability to... Or her willingness to look ugly or look bad.
Yeah.
I don't think Jennifer Lopez has that. I think Salma Hayek could because she's in a body cast and she's just this like bump on a log and she always looks beautiful, but I think those harder parts.
That can you imagine her doing the miscarriage scene?
No, I can't. And that's another thing that makes her fragile is that she gets pregnant and the first thing Diego Rivera says is like, it's not a good time. So that sucks. But then he goes, well, do you want this baby? And she says, yes. And he says, okay. And then she has a miscarriage and the doctor tells her beforehand, you know, it's very unlikely that this pregnancy will come to term. And so, of course, it doesn't. And she's absolutely devastated. But yeah, those types of very raw, very real emotions, Jennifer Lopez could never.
No. She couldn't could connect.
No.
You know what I mean, you could see just the way that she carried herself. Selma turns into an artist. Like she just breathes. Yeah. Her performance was amazing. It's a shame that she didn't win. She's not being recognized and praised more for a performance because, right. you know, I mean, I've seen actresses do far worse.
Yeah.
And still get, you know, the accolades that I just don't think they deserve.
Yeah. Do you think her career was at all affected by Harvey Weinstein?
Oh, yeah.
But of course not to, like, the level of Ashley Judd. But, you know, I was looking at her filmography after Frida, and I don't know what I was thinking I was going to see, but there was a lot of films I was like, I've never heard of this, or I don't recognize it, or like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember that. Like, it wasn't a ton of
like hits,
big just, stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. You know what I mean? I think it's Harvey Weinstein. I think it's that she stood up to him like mm-hmm. to a degree, you know,
yeah.
and she just didn't play by his rules 100%. Right. What happened to her probably carried trauma for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
And how she integrated and you know, kind of connected with people in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And also, she's a woman of color.
Yeah.
During the early 2000s, and we were all keep hope alive, and you know, yes, we can.
Right.
And we're in a post-racial America, and the reality is like it was still impossible for Latinx performers and artists and actors and actresses. Right. To get jobs.
Well, let's look. I mean, she was a vampire stripper in From Dusk Till Dawn. She was a stripper in Dogma. She was the sexy nurse in Across the Universe. Like, she was, you know, often typecast to be those very sensual, very, very sexy, just like a sex pot kind of person, right? So, the relationship with her and Diego basically is, you know, he's kind of like, you know, can you live with the fact that I'm not going to be faithful to you? And she's like, I don't care about that. I care if you're loyal.
Yeah. What she...
she doesn't. She doesn't. She still gets upset with him when he sleeps with other women. Like, there's a time where he, you know, she sees him painting this model and, you know, she brings him lunch or something like that. And then later he comes home and she hugs him and she can obviously like smell her on him. And she like, you know, hits him and just says, take a good bath because we're going out tonight. So we know it hurts her, you know, but also, you know, after the sisters, when things really go downhill, the thing I love, which I know is historically accurate, is that they have separate dwellings that are connected by a bridge.
Yeah.
Which honestly,
heaven.
How ideal.
Heaven.
I wouldn't want that with Seth because I like being around him so much. But but I for two people like that who are their own person, they're their own artist, you know, she continued to paint because of his encouragement, and always wanted a fair critique, didn't want to be one of his girls that he just said it was good and then slept with them. And
well, and it was clear that he, you know, I mean, there's a scene where they're like, we're just going to be friends. We're not going to be like,
let's
like
make a deal.
But he pretty much says like, I think you were made for me in the sense of I find you to be my equal.
Yeah.
You're my peer.
Yeah.
You know, you are as equally as talented as me. You are as equally as passionate and fierce as me. Mm-hmm. And I know you'll hold me accountable. And she did. I mean, during the whole film, she did not, She did not play.
No, she did not play.
No, she loved him fiercely. Now, one thing that did kind of get on my nerves is like at the end, I can't remember the character's name, her last lover.
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, God. It's just with a T. He's a famous.
Last lover?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm drawing a blank right now.
Oh, my gosh. Hold on.
While you're looking that up, a relationship that I loved.
Leon Chertowski.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because, yeah. You know, I mean, they had an affair.
Yeah.
Diego gets mad about it.
Right.
Now I can't even think of what I was going to say.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm so embarrassed.
Well, I wanted to say that a relationship that was surprising in the film, but overall pretty cool to watch, was her relationship with his ex-wife.
Yeah. That Lupe. One was, yeah. That one
right,
was
she wakes up in the morning, breakfast is on the table. She's thinking, oh my gosh, Mi Amor has cooked this beautiful meal. And he's like, no, it's Lupe. She lives upstairs. And she's like, what? And she throws the food away. That's something I would have done, absolutely. You know, goes because Lupe. This was good, but don't do it again.
Gotta talk.
But, you know, she has their children.
Yeah.
Right? And so Diego Rivera is not a good person. Like, he marries these women, has children with them, and then leaves them. But you can tell he's not interested at all in children. And then there was something interesting that I read also, and it's disgusting. And so in one of the first scenes of the film, they're in the auditorium, right? They're spying on Diego Rivera painting this naked woman.
Yeah.
And then after they leave, you know, Lupe, his wife at the time, comes out and, you know, scolds him for being so flirtatious with this woman. And of course, they end up having sexual relations. And so Diego is, you know, kissing this woman and, you know, and said something about, like, you know, I've eaten women's flesh or something like that. Oh. Did you catch that part?
No.
And he goes, I've eaten it with like a tortilla or something like that. And in the moment, it's like, you know, eating can mean, is that like a sensual thing? Oh. Like, what are you doing? Where are you? You know, whatever. I don't really want to picture that. But I guess like it was referenced that like that was like a real thing. What? Like the female cannibalism in 1904 with Diego Rivera, that wasn't just like made up for the film. Like that comes from something.
Wow.
And that's gross and uncalled for.
Army
hammer. But you know, I know, but that's why I was like so drawn to it. Cause I'm like, we talked about not too long ago, the Army Hammer thing. But yeah, so he's not like a good guy, but oftentimes men are so revered for their art or their ability for whatever expertise that everybody just looks past that shit.
Yeah.
I thought Alfred Molina did a great job. I think he's a good actor.
Yeah, he's a great, yeah. They were a perfect pairing.
They were a good pairing. He is Doc Ock in Spider-Man.
He is Doc too. Ock.
And that's always what I remember. That is my forever
character
he will be in my head.
Yeah, I thought.
I know.
Yeah, I thought he did a great job. I think he really did a good job at balancing her. You know, there's just so many scenes where the fighting was just back and forth and back and forth. And you could see people wrestling with, you know, at a time where infidelity was a sin.
Right.
A mortal sin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people didn't get divorced. It was
very
uncommon or looked down upon if you did.
Right.
So you could see people wrestling with the concept of like polyamory, which has always been around, but like, you know, depending on where your culture is and like it's not promoted or accepted.
Right.
And so, but like even Frida Kahlo, she had relationships with other men. Other women. She dated Josephine Baker for a period of time.
Yeah.
And so I wish we could have saw, I mean, not to say, oh, I want to see a lesbian scene, but I would wish we could see, you know, there were small scenes where you could tell like, oh, she made out with a woman. It was a lot of like queer baiting, but it wasn't this like, she was a full, proud, queer woman.
Yeah.
And it wasn't this kind of, oh, I'm just doing this back to get to my husband. No, she had.
Yeah, she had desire for that. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I don't. And another thing, too, is the kind of political backdrop of the Communist Party. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so Diego Rivera introduces that to Frida because you can kind of tell it's this like this, you know, apartment with all these people, and they're these young minds that are, you know, the, you know, Viva la Revolucion and, you know, all of that stuff. And so he kind of introduces her to that, right? And so he was proud of his party, but the scene that I thought, and this is why I don't think he's like that awesome. I'm not saying he's not talented, but the flaw I see, and this is something that is so common now when men are accused of something current, you know, in today's day and age, and then are found out to have been acting really shitty, you know, and using their male privilege to basically do whatever they want because they're often in a position of power. But, you know, there's a scene where he's talking to Rockefeller, played by Edward Norton, and he's like, you know, I'm not going to compromise my principles, because he wanted to paint Lenin, right? And in this mural in Rockefeller Center. And Edward Norton's like, love it, but no. If I may, provide a critique for you. People will be offended by that.
Can we put Abraham Lincoln?
We put someone, you know, that everybody likes? And so he said, you know, a lot of people will be offended, especially my father. And he's like, I can't compromise my principles. And that results in him losing that job, losing other, you know, subsequent commissions in Chicago and various other places. But Frida Kahlo says to him, or I think it's her that says this, but it's like, so you'll wine and dine with these people and you'll accept their women and you'll accept their food and eat at their table, but you won't do this.
Yeah, she did. She called him out.
Yeah, which is great, because that's such bullshit. Like, oh yeah, I want to go and I want to be entertained and I want these women and I want the fame. I want this recognition, but no, I'm not going to do this.
Right.
It's so half-assed.
Yeah. And it was, you can, in the beginning scenes, like when they go to New York, she's kind of writing her diary and she's talking about how Diego is going to these parties. And so she sets it up perfectly to say, you know, he's being kind of entrapped by...
Right.
I mean, these worldly desires.
Well, you know, he's,
and so does it cheapen his message? And that's
kind
of like, I think she was trying to say to him, she couldn't say because it's her man,
right?
But like, does it cheapen the message? Does it cheapen the goal if you can accept all these things, but then when you're sticking it to them, you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I have to stick to my morals. Where did your morals come?
Right.
When did they go?
Well, you're just a watered down revolutionary at that point.
Yeah.
So,
and it's so powerful to see a woman, I mean, to hold that space.
I know.
And, you know, he was disrespectful. He didn't take her advice, whatever, but he didn't dismiss her. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so by the end of the film, you get to the point where you could see, especially when he's talking about, you know, she can't, by the end of the scene, the woman's on her deathbed.
Right.
She had gangrene, so they had to cut off toes, and she had some, I think, like pneumonia or bronchitis or something with the lungs, and so they're like, "You cannot move from this bed." It was her solo exhibition, biggest moment of her life, where she was trying to work towards.
Right,
and so Diego says, "You know, stay home. I'll wine and dine them, and of course, and I'll entertain them." But I did really find that he did start off; it was about him. And it was about how, when he was introducing Frida, how he met her and how Frida was chasing. But then there was a switch, and you could tell he started, your face. And then, so I'm interested. Do you feel like he starts complimenting her and talking about her as a person, as an artist, not about as his wife or the girl that he met, but as the person who she displays to the world? Do you feel like he, at the end, did he admire her? Did he, you know, look up to her? Did he truly see her as an equal? Or is that something that he, like, played towards her to keep her?
I would like to think that he admired her.
Okay. That's what I thought, too. I mean, it's, yeah.
I think despite all of his flaws, he did admire her.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question, though. But yeah, I think he did. I think he did see her as an equal.
Yeah.
Because she was unlike anyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, she wore a green dress on her wedding. Or no, so on the day of their wedding, she has this really traditional, beautiful white dress, long sleeve, high collar. And then she looks at herself in the mirror and then she has this little smile on her face and comes out in a green dress.
And beautiful.
And then she looked phenomenal. And her mom's like, good God.
Her mom's her face all
just like, once. Yeah.
Frida.
So again, and, but yeah, so yeah, I think he did admire her.
Yeah.
Right.
And I love that she was like carried in on her bed.
Yes.
And she's like, why are you crying?
Here I am.
Here I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible woman. Yeah. Really incredible. When's the first time you learned about Frida Kahlo?
Probably watching that movie.
Really?
Watched it for like an art class or something.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
I learned in like my probably sophomore year of high school, I had a Spanish teacher that was incredible. Like top two teachers I've ever had in my life. She was no joke. And she expected a lot, but we did a lot. It wasn't just all verb conjugation or, you know, practicing little, like, where's the bathroom? It was like,
where's the baño?
We are learning about Mexico, you know, and South America and who is to know and culture and art and food. And like, it was a very robust curriculum. So that's when I first learned about her.
So you're saying your Spanish teacher wasn't Dora the Explorer?
She wasn't.
Oh, shit.
Surprisingly, no, Senora Youngman was not in fact Dora the Explorer, but she was amazing. So anyway, that's kind of when I first learned about her.
Yeah.
But,
and I think that's why this movie was so exciting. It was to see, you know, a famous Latinx Mexican woman.
Yeah.
Kind of and just playing her as a real woman. It wasn't this glamorous, you know, sometimes like Selena movie is really good, but they kind of glamorize her a little bit.
And of they
kind of sugarcoat it. You know what I mean? They don't show all the jacks. Whereas this one, like you could high, slows, the good, the bad. Selma did an amazing job. And that's why I think she deserves more praise because she kept the woman as a real woman.
Yeah.
And I felt this movie was slightly timeless in the sense of like the dialogue didn't seem too too old world. Like so you always felt like this is now, this is then, this is before, this is past, present. She always seemed to be relevant, human, real.
Yeah. I had a question for you. I was thinking about this while watching the movie. So obviously for a film like this at, you know, I think it's Lionsgate is
distributed.
So it's a big, you know, big company, Hollywood company, you know, with films like these where I don't know if the word is should, but everyone should be speaking Spanish. Right. But of course the whole film is in English because, us dum-dums can't like learn another language.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Because I'm watching this because no one would watch it if they had to have subtitles. And that's why they do
that,
right?
I don't know. No. I mean, when are we talking? Back then or now?
I'm talking back then.
Oh, back then. Yeah, it would have been too art house, too indie kind of film.
Right. And so, And so would that be the case now?
No.
If they were making Frida now, would they do it in Spanish?
It would have been all in Spanish except for if there were English parts because of Parasite.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The fact that Parasite won, was it best film, right? Best director.
Best director.
Best film too, though?
Did it?
Oh, gosh.
I should know. That was like 2 years. Last year? Yeah. 2 years ago.
No.
Last year. Oh, my gosh. What is time?
Best. Yeah. They won Best Picture.
Thank you.
That was all in subtitles.
And that was?
I mean, that was all in Korean, right?
Yeah. And so, you're right. It had subtitles. So, yes.
I would have watched it with subtitles.
But at the time, people weren't doing that.
No.
So does that bother you?
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
It bothers me too.
I wish this movie was in Spanish. I can read subtitles, you know what I mean?
Well, in any translation from one language to another, you lose something.
Yeah.
You know, things don't always translate one for one. And so whether it's a certain way of conveying something or words that were used or you know, it's just not the same.
Yeah, and even she was, you know, her father was what?
German
Jew.
Yeah, that's what he says.
Yeah. I there still were probably scenes where she would spoke English.
Yeah.
So like I wouldn't mind that kind of flow. And we talked about Real Women Have Curves. The most of the movies in Spanish.
Yeah,
like
good chunks of it.
Spanish. And so like I don't see that as a problem. I would rather see the movie. I think it would enhance the movie.
Well, it'd be more authentic, certainly.
More authentic.
But it would enhance it, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have rather watched it with Spanish.
Yeah.
As the main language.
Did you feel like it was long?
It was 2 hours.
Yeah.
Only reason I thought it was long is because I watched it on an app called Pluto TV.
Thanks, Pluto right on, TV.
Thanks, Roku. And there was a commercial every 7 minutes, I swear. But like four commercials. And so it just was really like, okay, it wasn't any fault of the film. It was just that, oh my God, like, let's get on with it. I didn't ever feel like there was a part that I was like, this is so slow. But I would expect a film like that to be, you know, it's her whole life besides her childhood.
Yeah, her adult.
So two hours is
not,
you know, that didn't bother me at all.
I didn't think it was too long. I don't think it was too long. I do feel like there were scenes where the pace was slow.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that means it was too long, if that makes sense.
But yeah, no, I get
it. I definitely feel like it was a good chunk of time. I just wish certain scenes were a little bit more snappier.
A little snappier.
Yeah.
Yeah, but overall,
great film.
Great film.
What would be the drink?
What do they drink? Okay, so there's a scene in the film that Ashley Judd's character says, whoever drinks the most of this can dance with me. And it's after Diego Rivera and the gentleman that is played by Antonio Banderas. And then so they each take big drinks of it. Tequila, obviously, would be the drink.
Yeah,
and that's probably tequila. And that's what I'm thinking it is.
Tequila,
which you're a fan and I am not.
Love tequila.
There's
good top shelf. What is it? Blue agave.
Oh,
it has to be like a certain type of agave for it to be like good tequila. I went to tequila tasting when I was in Mexico.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I loved it. I want to go back to Mexico so bad. I think going to Costa Rica this summer.
Fun.
But I would love to go to Mexico again. It's such a beautiful place.
It is a beautiful place. 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb.
Not bad.
Not surprising.
But I would love to see, again, I think if this movie was made now, I think it would have been like an 8 to a 9.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I think it would have been rated much higher. Who's the old guy? Roger Ebert?
The critic?
Yeah.
Yeah, Roger Ebert.
He gave it like a 4.5.
Out of 10?
Out of 5.
Oh, sorry. I was like, what? Okay.
So.
And as far as Rotten Tomatoes, 75% tomato meter, 85% audience score. So audiences liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, according to this one metric. But yeah. So, this was a nice conversation. Certainly a lot different than our last episode.
Oh, when you pick good movies.
You picked this one, so.
Oh, I did.
Oh, no. Oh, did I?
Oh,
I didn't.
Oh. Did I? Damn it.
Damn it. So thanks for listening to that. Do you want a Marvel update?
Yes.
Okay. For those of you just tuning in, Colin is thrilled that I'm finally watching all of the Marvel movies because I'm a DC girl. You have watched Justice League and I haven't even watched it yet.
Yeah, I watched it. I watched 8 hours of it because I watched the black and white.
Oh, my Lord.
I hate myself.
Well, at least it wasn't Vampire Diaries. And so we watched Captain Marvel, Iron Man, and Iron Man 2.
What did you think about, which Iron Man did you like more?
Well, they have Gwyneth Paltrow in them, so I like neither. Just kidding. I know.
Miss Pepper Potts.
Pepper Potts. Oh, God. Actually, her in this role doesn't actually bother me that much. It's tolerable, I will say. I will say that I enjoyed the second one more.
Yeah.
I like Jeff Bridges as the villain, you know, in the first one. I thought it was, I don't know why Terrence Howard was in the first one and then Don Cheadle replaces him as Rhodey.
There was some big controversy.
I love both of them, but I feel like Don Cheadle fits that role far better than Terrence Howard. He wasn't believable to me as like a military man.
And he's too, they didn't have good chemistry.
No.
Don Cheadle, they bounced.
Terrence Howard, because when I think Terrence Howard, I think Hustle and Flow
and
Crash and like those great films.
Very intense.
Because he's great. And he has a very particular voice.
Is he?
Voice.
Anyway, keep
But I thought Don Cheadle was better suited for that, so I was happier with Iron Man 2. But Captain Marvel is badass. I love that movie. It's a good great. One. It's great. That was the second time I saw it. So the next one we're watching is Thor, the first one.
You won't like it.
I won't?
I don't think so.
Why not?
The first Thor is okay. When you get to Thor 2.
What about when I get to Thor 7?
Thor 3 Ragnarok is the shit.
Is it? Yeah. I'm not trying to hate, but it is one of those situations of the more people tell me about it, the less inclined I am to like it, just to like prove a point.
No, you'll like it.
Okay.
You'll like it. You'll like three. I think you'll love Natalie Portman's coming back for God of Love and Thunder.
I love her.
And so yeah, you'll like it. It's what's his who directed? Why? Oh gosh, what's his name? He did like What's Done in the Dark. I'm gonna
Because Jon Favreau directs, Iron Man. I thought he might direct.
Taiki Waititi?
Oh, that guy. He did Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah, Jojo Rabbit. So
he's from New Zealand.
Yeah, good. It's really funny.
He did Thor?
Yeah, Ragnarok.
Okay.
And I think he's doing God of Thunder. Love and
Thunder. There's more?
Yeah, there's another one coming out.
I thought we were done. That was why I started to do it, because I thought Endgame was the end.
No! Oh
my God! And then WandaVision was 3 weeks later, and then we were done.
No, girl.
We'll never be done.
Never!
Oh my God.
Get into the universe.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, you know what? Once I get in there, I'm not going to be able to shut the fuck up about it, probably. Nope. So, what have you been watching? I forgot to ask you at the beginning. I very much apologize.
What have I been watching? TV-wise, I just restarted RuPaul's Drag Race.
We love RuPaul.
I don't know about love, but...
You don't love?
Oh, no. We should have a conversation about that.
I would love to.
We'll give you updates. Yeah, I've started season one over again for the 18th time.
Great.
So I'm bouncing between that, and I think I might start Golden Girls.
Oh.
Yeah. Thank you for being there.
Four national treasures. Which Golden Girl are you? Estelle. or Sophia,
yeah,
I'm played by Estelle Getty.
Yeah, I'm probably either Sophia. I think in my head I'm like a Rue McClanahan, like a
In college I was a Blanche.
Oh,
But now I'm a Dorothy.
You are Dorothy Spornak for real. Oh ma.
Oh, I am her. Bea Arthur is the business. R.I.P. Man, for she real. Is. She's the best. Well. You know what? Thanks for listening.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here.
Love Speak Studios.
And for all our Idaho listeners, enjoy the beautiful weather.
Yeah, finally.
It's going to be a hot one, so get those
gonna be
Daisy Dukes out and those nut cutters.
Get your Chacos out.
Oh, please.
If someone tells me that Chacos are the best shoe, like, if I have to hear another Idahoan talk about Chacos, I don't know.
I'm a Birkenstock boy. So
I'm a Birkenstock girl. But I also don't care that much, to be honest. But I'm not going to spend $100 on sandals. That sounds so dumb. So please don't talk to me about your
Oh my God. On that note,
we appreciate you listening and hope you'll join us next time.
Alrighty. Bye.
Bye. Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Colin.
And you've been listening to
Let's Hear It for the Girls.
It's always a great time at Speak Studios in Boise, Idaho, and we hope you enjoyed learning about the girls.
Now listen, you better like, subscribe, and review us on all major platforms. We'll see you next time.
And thanks for listening.